What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I'm Payne and Pendergast with you. Just got an email from Jimmy Shapiro. Seth, he's the PR. Jimmy runs the PR firm that sends a lot of stuff out from a lot of the gambling sites out there, a lot of the spreads and whatnot, and futures bets. Texans a 9-point underdog now against the Kansas City Chiefs. Yeah, sit tight, man. You might get up to that 10 handle here coming up soon.
You sons of You know what? I'm guilty of actually too saying that maybe things really clicked for the Chiefs in the fourth quarter of that Texans game where, all right, they haven't been winning by huge margins or anything. They did great in the fourth quarter of that game, the Chiefs did. And, you know, because they haven't pulled away from teams this year the way you might expect a team with a record that they do that's the number one seed in the AFC.
Mahomes
but they obviously know what they're doing in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
But then they really drubbed the Steelers, which, I don't know, given the state of the Steelers now over the last stretch of the season, I don't know. Maybe and now the Chiefs have been, by the time they play the game, they won't have played a game in 23 days.
Yes.
That alone, look, the Texans, it's a hard challenge they have, obviously. But when it comes to gambling and when it comes to finding the little narrow margins and everything, I think just any kind of rust, even in the first or second quarter, can greatly affect whether or not you beat a team by 9 points.
Yes.
I would bet on the Texans this week, just by virtue of the way their defense is playing right now, the potential for turnovers. The fact that the Texans played them competitively in Arrowhead Stadium a few weeks ago, I think that it's going to, as most Chiefs games have been this year, they've been one score games. I don't know why they would have this huge margin.
Now, when you say you would bet on the Texans, just for the benefit of people who aren't versed in the gambling arts, you're right now saying you would take the points. You're not picking them necessarily to win the game outright.
Yeah, I'm not making my final prediction on the game, right? You know, yeah. I would take a 9-point spread for sure.
You think it's going to be a closer game than the experts do right now? Yeah, I would agree with that. Here was Joe Mixon on Saturday after the game, talking about the Texans overcoming all their mistakes.
Yeah, I just think everybody just telling each other to settle in. You know, obviously I felt like emotions for the offense was running high because things started slow and we started picking up and everybody, you know, contributed. Everybody played a major factor today in our offense. And I think everybody plays a major role, no matter what your role is, from blocking to making plays to, you know, doing all the little things right. And we was able to do that today, man. So we just got to keep on displaying that keep overcoming things like that. But, you know, when it comes down to it, we can't have it. We can't turn over the football, and we just got to keep on going.
I think lost in the wash of the final score of the game on Saturday, the plays that just popped, like CJ's fumble snap, Hutch play, the scramble by CJ at the end of the half to set up the field goal, the slew of turnovers in the second half that the defense was able to force with Justin Herbert, all of those things, kind of lost in the wash was the Texans did a bunch of things in this game that certainly they can't do in Kansas City this week.
Yeah.
But they did a bunch of things that you would not normally find in a game where a team ends up winning the game by 20, where, you know, the 10, and, you know, some of that gets made up for by the turnovers that you're forcing, the ability to possess the ball at the end of the game. But if you had told me, if you had told me before this game, you know, the old blind look at the box score thing where I'm just going to hand you these factoids. What do you think the final outcome of the game was? If someone told me before the Chargers game, the Texans are going to turn the ball over on the first possession of each half, their first possession of each half.
Yeah.
They were going to have 8 penalties for 86 yards. They would have a possession where they're 2nd and 1 at the 4-yard line and they get sacked and settle for a field goal in this game because we know how precious those deep red zone possessions are for this team.
Right.
They don't get down there very much this year. And they gave up an 86-yard touchdown on a 3rd and 28 after 2 sacks.
Yeah.
I would have said, well, they definitely lost the game. It's just a question by how much. They won the game by 20, and in a weird way, I feel like, okay, that's kind of an indicator that the rest of the stuff is sort of hitting on all cylinders right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it actually, in a weird way, that actually excites me about this game because I think these are things we know they can't do in Kansas City. You know what I mean?
The biggest surprise for me by far with the offense was how much the run game opened up in the second half. Just these wide swaths that Joe Mixon had. And we really haven't seen that in the run game since maybe the Colts game in the first week of the season. It's been really, like, any yardage they got in the run game seemed like they had to just get beat about the head and shoulders, and every now and then Mixon would, you know, spring one, but it was not like a steady procession of positive run plays. And even along all of that, they had some really negative plays on the offensive line, both in the run and pass game. It wasn't like it was picture perfect. It's just they had way more positive plays than we've seen out of them.
Even that Colts game, because you're right, that's the only other game I can remember them sealing the deal like that. Even that Colts game, you remember, they needed CJ to throw that 3rd and 11 to Nico Collins along the sidelines in that tight window. This game, they ran 14 plays in that last drive. The first one was a pass to Cade Stover in the flat for about 5 yards. Every other play after that was either a C.J. Stroud scramble or a Joe Mixon handoff. Every single one. 13 straight runs to close out the game.
You know, the thing about the spread being 9 now in favor of the Chiefs, I think part of that is that, man, Andy Reid, you know, Andy Reid in opening games, Andy Reid after a bye week, he's very good when he's got extra time to game plan. And I think that's the biggest thing I'm nervous about is I don't care whether the Chiefs had 10 days of rest or 23 days or whatever it's going to be. Andy Reid's got a whole lot of time to – he'll have been looking at all his potential opponents and thinking about them. And as soon as it's the Texans, they've already got started on that game plan. So they've got time here. If you look at the opening round of the playoffs in the 2020s, last year they beat the Dolphins 26-7.
Ice bowl.
Year before in the divisional round, they beat the Jaguars 27-20. So like a one score game. Year before that, they beat the Steelers 42-21.
Yep.
Now in the 2020 playoffs, in the divisional round, it was 22-17 against the Browns.
That was the game where Mahomes got hurt in the fourth quarter and Chad Henne had to come in and finish out the game. That was the one playoff game the Browns have won in the last however many years.
Now if we go one year prior to the Houston Texans, which the final score, I blocked this from my memory.
51-31.
I know.
51-31. It was 24-0 early in the second quarter, and they trailed 28-24 at the half.
I haven't blocked the game from my memory. I had blocked the final score from my memory. I swear to you, no matter how many times I've seen that, it was still a shock to me when I saw, 51 points. Oh, after
51
after
points, 51 points with in 40 minutes. Like, they didn't score a point until early in the second quarter of that game.
You know, the crazy thing about that is, remember that run for them? They were down by double digits in every game in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And they won 51-31.
Yep.
Then they beat the Titans by 9 points.
Yeah.
And then they beat the 49ers by 11 points.
Okay, the most painful part of that, the most painful part of the whole sequence you just talked about there for the last minute, they beat the Titans in the AFC Championship game. If you held on to a 24-0 lead, you are not just in the AFC title game, you are hosting the AFC title game. The Titans were a 6 seed that year.
Yeah.
They pulled off a couple of upsets to get to the AFC title game. Like, Why? I was watching a clip here. We'll
play this. We'd be sitting here. We'd probably have Jack Easterby in studio right now. Is Easterby hired in 2020?
Then 2019.
Oh, he was there in 2019. Right. Yeah, Brian Gain was fired going into 2020.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, yeah. April 2019, Jack Easterby got here. You're right. The world may change in a weird way if they do win that game. You know.
Hey, everybody. Coming up next, we've got Jackie, like we like to call him, yeah. In studio. Jackie'd come in and I'd sit on his lap and he'd give me advice.
Mm-hmm. With lots of big words, like workflow. Yeah. Here was Chris Sims and one of the McCourties. I'm not sure which one. On the NBC set, talking about the layoff for the Kansas City Chiefs.
The three-week layoff bothers me about the Kansas City Chiefs. We saw the Texans be able to throw the short passing game. They got people that can play man-to-man, and we know their pass rushers are elite. Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. When you have that kind of layoff like the Chiefs have had, being on the New England Patriots, we got the bye week a lot. And you come out of that bye week, it's all about how the game starts. So I think for Houston, you have to get off to a good start. They're going to be a little rusty. Kansas City, jump on them and jump on them early.
Well, and I'll point out the Texans are one of the better first quarter teams in football.
That's been one of the biggest headaches. They had the point differential in the first half and the point differential in the second half are like almost mirror opposites of each other.
They showed
that's how they ended up with about dead even on that.
That's right. They showed that stat during the Chargers game. I think it's 5.5 points the Texans are averaging in the first quarter this year. It's like top 6 or 7 in the NFL. I think that was the number. I know they're one of the better first quarter teams. That's actually, boy, if you're giving out some handicapping here, like a first quarter bet on the Texans might be, rusty Chiefs with the biggest, Bobby Scripton stuff up for the first quarter, right?
The biggest thing that I get nervous about with the Chiefs having had a long layoff also is that their defense will be fresh and that Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator, very good at putting doubt into the quarterback's mind. Mm-hmm. So they've had a few weeks now to kind of mess around with little wrinkles, some of their own tendency busters, all of that. So it's harder for Reed to game plan for an unknown opponent. For Spagnuolo, I think he can kind of, as a defensive coordinator, you can add some wrinkles to your game that are going to work on against any quarterback. And, then you can kind of tweak it a little bit. But that'll be the big test for CJ, is that he's going to get up to the line and he's going to see a look that they think they feel comfortable with. And, Bobby, half the time we hear about plays gone wrong with Bobby, the explanation is, well, we were expecting cover 3 or, we were expecting quarters, and it turned out to be nothing like that.
Yep.
There's going to be a few moments like that.
Text message, can you guys talk about how bad Tytus Howard played at left guard on Saturday? It's a very serious concern. He didn't have his best game. I'll say that.
Yeah, and the thing with Tytus is it's a lot of the old stuff of like, wow, they're not picking up games.
Yeah.
It's
a trip and a hold.
It's a lot. But really, even aside from those penalties, it's that when it comes to just picking up the simple things, you got a tackle end twist. He looked like a lot of the other left guards that have played the position in there. So. I still feel better about him at left guard than the previous left guards. And I'm willing to accept some of the hiccups here or there just because there's something that comes with his athleticism and his body size that adds something to the run game and that adds to their offense in a way that those other guys couldn't. So there will be bad plays. There just will. But by and large, he's played pretty well as a guard, and I think there's times when they just want to, if you got to line up, and the thing about the Chargers is they got some big old hosses, with a base 3-4 front, Puna Ford, for one.
Oh, yeah, he was good.
And then Tyre Tart, the former Texan, did some nice things in that game, too. I think there were some benefits to having Tytus Howard in there, despite his bad plays. I don't think he was getting manhandled routinely the way some of the other guards have gotten manhandled by bigger, more physical guys. He did get manhandled at times.
He did.
But it wasn't just a complete bludgeoning the entire game long.
That'll be something to keep an eye on today, I think, because the Texans practice today. So today, in a normal week during the season, you know, you go Wednesday, Thursday, Friday practice. This week it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They're going to travel on Friday. So we'll get our first injury report of the week. I think the thing to keep an eye on is what's the status of Chris Jones. You know, Chris Jones hurt himself, I believe. I can't remember if it was in their game against the Texans or the Steelers. Did Chris Jones go out in the game against the Texans? I can't remember. But during that that four-day grind, one of those games, he went out with an injury, and they obviously he skipped week 18 like a lot of guys did. I'll be curious. It sounds like he's going to play. I'll be curious if he's on the injury report, any practices and whatnot.
I think he went out because he had earlier in the game, he'd gotten into a scuffle with somebody, and then I honestly got hurt like very quickly thereafter.
Yeah.
But just by way of comparison, everybody – so, right, yeah, Titus did not play like an all-pro left guard in that game or anything. And take it with a grain of salt because it's a PFF grade and everything. But, like, that game where Titus looked like it like, was his worst game, just by PFF scores, it wasn't as bad as any of Kenyon. Like, Kenyon Green's best game wasn't as good as that game that Titus Howard played.
He's the best solution right now.
Yeah. It's he's by far the better solution at left guard than any of the other options.
Yep. Text message. Did you all figure out why John Metchie was targeted so much on Saturday? Because they don't have any receivers right now. it's Nico Collins, Nico Collins, and not ready to play full time Deontay Johnson right now.
Right, and that's why. And like, why was he targeted? Because he was open.
He's open.
He just couldn't hold on to the ball.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Yep.
But now part of that though too, because this was a good development. I think over the last 2 weeks, they've done a better job of attacking all areas of the field. The short game, using some of the like stop routes and things like that. It's been curious as to why they haven't been there. You know, some of the slants and crossers, I think they did a better job of that. The offensive line has been such an issue all season long that I know sometimes it feels like, okay, and I feel this way, like, okay, the antidote to some of these pass protection issues are just get the short game going. The problem is that when you spread out and to get a short game going and get multiple receivers on routes, there's just so little respect for the pass rush that teams can play really aggressively on that. They'll try to get short game going, and teams are like, no, we'll just mug everybody because somebody's going to come free on the defensive line. There were, again, yes, there were bad pass protection snaps, but on the sum total of it all, they've improved in pass protection compared to what they were earlier in the year.
Text message, man, y'all got me this morning with the Star Wars scenes through the lens of Nick Caserio. My two favorite moments, Seth couldn't remember what species Chewie was, and Sean's...
Multiple times within 1 minute, I couldn't remember.
And Sean's Wookiee of the Year comment. Oh, thank you. he said, I'm a little behind because I'm on the Odyssey app. And that is our opportunity to tell you to download the Odyssey app because you can subscribe to our podcast, which is doing great. And you can rewind as well. You can rewind the show and listen to segments like that.
One of the listeners yesterday, their favorite moment was when I kind of casually said in passing, Sean and I haven't done crack in decades.
That was great. That totally sailed past me. I went back and listened to it. I'm like, that was good. That was a good line.
Those are better when they sail past you. You just keep moving along.
That's it, man. All right, coaching carousel. Where are we at? How nervous are we if the Jags hire this guy? And what are the chances Deion Sanders is coaching in the NFL next year? The odds makers have put it out there. We'll see if we agree. We'll do that coming up next.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how.
Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Steph, how would we feel if the Jacksonville Jaguars signed Liam Cohen, the OC that coached Baker Mayfield, to 41 touchdown passes this season?
Oh.
How would we feel if he were to be hired to try to rehabilitate the career of one Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville?
I'm torn because Liam Cohen, I'm trying to channel Tom Middlescreen, our listener, who likes to judge coaches by their physical appearance.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's a scruffiness to Liam Cohen that looks a little bit like old school football guy, but I feel like he might have a little too much of a waddle and a weak chin to be taken seriously as a head football coach.
Okay.
If we go completely and totally by that, I'm just not quite so sure about it. Now, the work that he's done with Baker Mayfield has been very, very good. He hasn't cured Baker Mayfield's interception issues or anything else like that. I would be more nervous about him than if the Jaguars sign a defensive-minded head coach. And with full disclosure, most of you who listen to the show know that I don't put as much stock into, hey, hire an offensive guru to go handle your quarterback. Because it doesn't really tell me whether the guy's actually a good head coach or not.
Yeah.
Like, first and foremost, hire a guy who's got great leadership skills and all of that. The thing is, in Jacksonville, though, this next coach might be the final say on whether Trevor Lawrence is genuinely a good NFL quarterback or not.
Yes.
And, like, so this guy, if there's a scary Trevor Lawrence in there, Liam Cohen might be the guy to do it. So I would prefer that they not go with Liam Cohen.
If you look at this division, I think the Texans are way out in front of everybody right now. They're way out in front of the Colts, way out in front of the Titans, and they're way out in front of the Jaguars, both by record and I think just by makeup of the team. And if anything, that win over the Chargers hammered that point home and probably created an even bigger delta, at the very least perception-wise, created a bigger delta. The Texans are one of the last eight teams standing in football, and they deserve to be. They deserve to be one of the last eight teams standing in football. They dominated the Chargers in that playoff game as an underdog in that game. The thing that can close the gap the quickest in the AFC South on the Texans is someone unlocking what we thought Trevor Lawrence was supposed to be. That's the thing that can make – that's the one element among all three of those teams. Because I don't think Anthony – I think Anthony Richardson is unsalvageable, in my opinion. I think he's always going to be a sub-50% passer of the football. Trevor Lawrence, we've seen him play at high levels at the pro level before, you know?
Right, no, and the big thing, not to get off on an Anthony Richardson tangent, but, like, the biggest thing is, okay, he looked better when he came back, but part of that was they ran him twice as often as they had before, and lo and behold – he ends up with back spasms.
Yeah, not sustainable.
The guy is the classic guy who is so freakishly athletic that it might be too much for his own body to handle. Like, he's going to get injured all the time. He's been injured every year since his senior year in high school.
Yep.
So, when it comes to the Jaguars, I think one of the biggest knocks on Liam Cohen is that, okay, well, he doesn't have much of a track record. All right, well, you can say the same thing about Sean McVay, Kevin O'Connell, various other guys.
Yeah.
That he's done well in his first crack at the bat. So there's a wild card element in an unknown quantity to him that, yeah. If the worst thing that happened was the Jaguars' offense ends up being really good, but he's not a good head coach and the defense is bad, guess what? They're still a better team than they are this year.
Dude, Doug Peterson literally won a Super Bowl and he flunked out as the Jags coach. You know what
I
mean?
Like, right,
right. Yeah. So, I don't get too wrapped up in that. Deion Sanders is number two on the – by the way, Liam Cohen -110 to be the next coach of the Jags, which means it's basically him versus the field. You risk 100. It's essentially a coin flip shot at minus 110. You risk 110 to win 100. Deion Sanders is second on the board for two of the six current openings. There's six openings right now, with the Patriots having filled theirs with Mike Vrabel. We'll hear from him in a second. Deion is 3-1 to be the next Cowboys head coach, behind only Kellen Moore, who used to be the OC there. He's the Philly OC. And he's 2-1 to be the Raiders' next head coach, behind Ben Johnson, who is essentially 1.5-1. Ben Johnson's the favorite for two jobs, Bears and Raiders.
Okay, so if I were Jerry Jones, I would set down my glass of Johnny Walker Blue, and I would ask myself, Jerry, this might be the last go-round we have here at hiring a head coach.
Yeah.
Unless I hire Deion Sanders and we win three Super Bowls, at which point I'll fire him because he's getting too much attention. So, it's that there's been this really ever since the first – we had Ross Tucker on earlier, and Ross Tucker said, I don't know at what point the Cowboys just seem to start caring more about making money than winning football games. That was from the inception. That was from the moment Jimmy Johnson got fired. There were players on that team. Michael Irvin will talk about this publicly, that, man, Jerry Jones just wanted to invite the circus in all the time. And Jimmy Johnson wanted to keep the circus out.
Yeah.
And Jerry couldn't live with not having the biggest spectacle in town. It's been like that since the inception. So Jerry's got to find a guy that's okay with the circus, but that also is an actual football guy and can manage all those distractions. And Deion Sanders just seems like the absolute perfect fit
thrives,
for all of that.
Thrives on it. Yeah.
If you want to make more money, if you want to enliven your fan base and jack up ticket prices despite not winning, Deion's the guy.
Yeah.
And Dallas fans will jump on whole hog onto that.
Yep.
And you're going to get extra cameras around. You're going to get all of that. And Deion, I think, has the ability to relate to younger players. Mm-hmm. He's been a player himself, so he understands that part of it. Yeah, I think it's the perfect fit. I think unless it becomes a money thing and Deion wants like $40 million a year or something, I think it's a slam dunk. And I know Deion will have his reservations and what have you. It's a boatload of cash is always a big influence, and I think if they sell it to him the right way, and not to mention just that he's – I don't know if he still has his home in Dallas or not, but – it's a perfect fit in so many – I mean, it's a little bit of a – it's a more grand and extreme version of D'Amico coming back here.
Yeah,
it just feels right. Yeah. If I'm a Cowboys fan, I'm guessing this just kind of feels right.
Right, yeah. It's D'Amico dragging two circus tents behind him, basically, is what it is.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with that. Now, to be clear, the reports are that Jerry Jones and Deion Sanders discussed – the Cowboys head coaching job. That can mean, how intense the discussions were. Because Deion, either through an interview or through a statement, because I've seen quotes from him since this report came out, he's reiterated how happy he is in Boulder. He loves the student body and the fans.
Which is what everybody says right up until they take the UT baseball job.
100%, Yep.
Tom Herman's going to be, he's still here, right? Because he was going to be here for life. And he is still alive. I saw he lost some weight. Yeah,
he's had two jobs. Aaron Glenn's a favorite for the Jets job and the Saints job. Aaron Glenn's the heaviest favorite on the board for any job right now. He's minus 200, which means 1-2 to get the Saints job.
I'm trying to figure out, as a friend and former teammate of Aaron Glenn, whether I want for him the Saints job or the Jets job. And obviously there's the Saints. This is what I would say about the Saints. They've got and have had their salary cap issues and woes, but it wasn't anything that surprised them. That was a plan that they had the entire time they were trying to extend the Drew Brees era. They knew that they were going to have to pay the Piper at some point. And I respect them as a team that was able to manage that as well as they did.
Yeah.
And as an organization, despite, I know these last few years have kind of colored them differently because of all these basically pre-planned issues.
Yeah.
I think it's a better situation for him. The Jets he played for the Jets. He was a draft pick of the Jets. It was a different era and a better time when Parcells was there. I feel like New Orleans is a better organization.
I totally agree with that. I tell you now, like, the cap situation you're inheriting is still a thing with the Saints. As you point out, it's not over yet. You know?
Right, right. But that's where it comes in. And this is one thing that Aaron has going for him on these interviews. Okay, DeMeco did a great job as a defensive coordinator in San Francisco, but he took over a defense that was already one of the best defenses in the league. Aaron took over a defense that was one of the worst defenses in the league in 2020. So he's been there through a long and sometimes very painful rebuilding and restocking defensively. And yet they've turned into a really good defense, and they've done it this year despite having a boatload of injuries.
Yes.
So if he goes to New Orleans, he's going to have the benefit of the doubt in terms of, all right, this is, we have salary cap constraints.
Yeah.
It might be, I don't think there will be people that expect a quick turnaround.
Yes.
Not to say that it can't happen, but I think he'll get the benefit of the doubt that sometimes first-year coaches don't get, you know, even when it's obvious that it's a tough turnaround.
He's got a great doing more with less story in any interview, right? If you're interviewing with a team. And I think the Saints and the Jets are predisposed to loving Aaron Glenn because he played at both those places. You know, they know Aaron Glenn.
Right, and Aaron only spent 1 year as a player there, but at the end of his career, I think Aaron had already – Aaron knew he was going to go into football when he was done – but he wasn't really sure whether it was going to be on the front office side of things or on the coaching side of things. And if I remember correctly, I'll fact check myself on this later. If I can't remember what was reported and what my conversations with Aaron about it. I think New Orleans knew that he was, you know, he was interested in that. So they've probably, you know, had discussions with him about stuff, and they know him as a mature leader and the guy that he was. So if I had to choose for him, I would choose New Orleans.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Last segment coming up, we'll talk to the guys on In the Loop. Advice from Gronk for a new head coach, and is this week's bye week comment from an ESPN talking head? We'll discuss that coming up next.
Karam Injury Lawyers Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you, Payne and Pendergast. Hey, Ben, let's hit the Vrabel and Gronk stuff that we missed in the previous segment. Here's Mike Vrabel on how he plans on helping Drake May.
Drake is going to be his own person, but I'm going to give him some things that I feel like are necessary to help us win football games. We have to be a very efficient passing football team, right? And when you look at statistically of what wins in the National Football League, our ability to affect the other team's quarterback and our ability to provide for an efficient quarterback and passing game is a high contributor to success. And there's a lot of ways to do that, you know, by protecting the middle of the pocket and, you know, all those things that we're going to talk about as we move forward. But how we protect the football, how we're aggressive but not reckless, you know, understanding where we are in the game and the situational awareness that I feel like I've developed over 6 years and then my past year in Cleveland.
Yeah, I think I can't remember when we talked about this a week or two ago. There was a part of me that thought, man, it feels like in hiring Vrabel, you're just trying to go back to the old well again and bring back the Belichick days as much as possible, the Patriots way, all of that. And I think I was overthinking it because I thought about it after that show that day that we talked about it. Oh, yeah, you know what? Vrabel is never going to be a guy who's trying to imitate or pretend he's Bill Belichick. Like, Vrabel is very much Mike Vrabel.
Opposite energy.
He's his own man.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, he, you know, he was the guy Ted Johnson used to tell us about. It was hilarious because he would call Belichick out. He had he was the one guy that could get away with kind of busting Belichick's chops. So, and he's already proven as a head coach. He did some really impressive things in the COVID year, especially when he had to play with all those different offensive line combinations throughout the year. I think he's got that blend of, hey, he's a player, a former player, so he understands that side of it, but he also is not soft or isn't tough enough or anything like that. So I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And I think probably, for the organization and his familiarity maybe with Bob Kraft, that goes a long way, just in that the relationship between the coach and the owner is always just one of the biggest unknowns any coach is going to face going into a situation. Vrabel's going to know what the challenges of working with Bob Kraft are, what the benefits are, all of that. So I think it's probably a good blend. And boy, it's weird. We're just talking about Aaron Glenn potentially going back to a team he played for with the – you got Dan Campbell. Dan Campbell's with a team he played for. D'Amico Ryan's with a team he played for.
Yeah.
Who was the other one we were talking about?
I don't know who the other one was we were talking about.
Oh, Deion, possibly.
Going back to Deion.
A team that he played for. And now you got Mike Vrabel going back to a team that he played for. There is that big X factor of the interaction in the relationship of the owner and the coach that you're going into blind usually. Bill O'Brien didn't really know anything about the McNairs other than some brief introductions and interviews. Maybe there's way more to that than we would realize.
I think it was a big selling point for D'Amico for sure coming back here. You know, knowing Cal and Hannah and Janice for sure.
Well, the thing that it helped out with there is that, man, people were really using the Texans for a few years there as like, hey, if I want to be a national media member who can virtue signal and paint the Texans out to be the worst people who ever, paint out the McNairs to be just a bunch of backwoods hillbilly racist whatever, like people got away with talking a lot of smack about the McNairs that went way over the top.
Yes.
Like there were certainly reasons for valid criticism,
yeah,
and what have you, for various things, but they went so far over the top. And if you're a coaching candidate that doesn't know the McNairs, there's a lot of kind of the prejudice and perception hammered into your brain,
yep,
that might make you skeptical of it. So D'Amico knowing the McNairs, I think that paid a lot of dividends for the McNairs, obviously.
Yeah, perception-wise, for sure. And in actuality, like I've said even back during the bad days, that I think Cal had the makings of the owner that you want because he'll spend money and he'll stay out of the way of people. You know, you just
right, which it can be great when you've got the right coach and
the right
GM.
Yes, yeah,
and the right whatever Jack Easterby's title was.
Right, but right, yeah, for sure. Here was Gronk on Fox this weekend with his advice for Mike Vrabel.
This guy is going to keep everyone accountable in the organization, from the coaching staff to the players. He's going to keep himself accountable, and even the front office he's going to keep accountable. And let me tell you, once again, this guy has knowledge, he has the power, and he's going to be great. He knows how to discipline players. And if I'm Mike Vrabel, the first thing I would do is call up and dial up the number of Josh McDaniels, a familiar foe to Patriot fans, and hire him as the offensive coordinator as soon as possible.
Do you think Gronk knows what a foe is? Like, he just said, Josh McDaniels, yes, a familiar foe to Patriot fans. I think Patriot fans like Josh McDaniels. He was a really good OC for that.
What was he trying to say there?
A familiar face.
Yeah, okay. I like Gronk because every time he speaks on camera, it reminds me of like me and my freshman year public speaking class.
Dude.
Where I'm just a little, just kind of amped up and going, and you know, like you're just, but a little breathless and everything.
He's a boulder rolling down the hill, you know?
Yeah. But it's every time.
Every time.
He's been in front of cameras for a long time. But it's endearing because you feel like he's very genuine.
Yeah.
And he's trying so hard. Because I think there's a lot of it. I think he probably understands there's a perception of him as a meathead. So he's trying hard to overcome that.
Yes.
But at the same time, he's not doing an incredible job,
dude,
of it. But he's trying, man. No. He's trying.
And I think he makes good points. I don't think that's bad advice.
No. I think it's what he's saying.
Yeah.
I'm more just thinking about like Gronk
delivery.
Gronk, you know what? Gronk is the guy in your group project where all the kids are like, it's the jock and three nerds, and the nerds are like, oh, great, we got the meathead. But he actually does want to help and everything, and they're like, you know what? Let's have him do the presentation because people like him.
Yeah,
so we'll have him get up and do the presentation,
yeah,
and we'll help him and everything, and it works.
Oh my God! Can you imagine?
I was that dumb meathead in the group projects.
Get out of here!
They're like, listen, Seth, we'll take care of the actual brain stuff, and then we'll just have you get up and deliver it.
And you surprise some people along the way,
right? Yeah, right?
Look
yeah.
At you. Look at
I
you.
I surprised myself. I was like, oh, actually, these people are listening to what I'm saying.
Yeah,
oh,
man.
All right,
Gronk,
I could
Gronk,
take over the world and manipulate people. I could rule the world with a microphone,
which is what we're trying to do.
Best in the world.
Best
they
in
say.
The world. I was just gonna say, best in the world. All right, is this cut from Stephen A. Smith, is this enough to get the Texans as over-the-top feeling disrespected as Rex Ryan's bye week comment did?
Stephen A., who's more on upset alert, the Chiefs or Lions?
The Lions. And I only say that because I'm giving the Texans zero chance against the Chiefs. Zero. I mean, it was a nice season. You know, they've had a lot of injuries, and we get that. If Dell and Diggs and those brothers were available, I'd feel differently. But no, they don't have a chance against the Kansas City Chiefs. That's why I say that with the Commanders, we're sitting there raving about Jaden Daniels and how mercurial he is and what he has the potential to pull off and do, even though I expect the Lions to win this game. But you know what? This brother's something special. Not to say that C.J. Stroud is not, because I know that he is. But I think that when you look at the Houston Texans, I don't see them. I give them no chance of beating the Kansas City Chiefs this upcoming weekend. I give the Commanders a very, very slight chance because obviously all the injuries that the Detroit Lions have suffered, even though they're going to be at home, I just think that the Commanders have a better chance of winning than the Texans do.
Okay, so this is the thing. For one, you know how I feel. If you've spent any amount of time watching and covering the NFL and you feel like any team in the NFL doesn't have a chance of beating another team in the NFL
ever,
on any given Sunday,
yeah,
you're lying or you're stupid. And I know Stephen A. Smith isn't stupid. So there's that. Like, so I almost like I can't even rebut it. Like, it's okay, look, upsets happen all the time. Now, as far as realistically expecting them to win, yeah, you should be very, very skeptical of the Texans' realistic chances of winning. The Chiefs have been so interesting all year long because on paper, you would say, even with their playoff history and their regular season history, you'd say, well, all right, well, there's a little bit of luck involved here, this, that, the other thing. But the fact of the matter is, what it comes down to is that they are very, very good in fourth quarters. They're very, very good at managing the game. And in games where, some of those games where it's only been a one-score victory, it's a lot of other teams would have lost by two scores.
Oh, yes.
It's, you know, like, even when things aren't going well offensively, they still sustain drives. They don't let things get out of hand. So their record, they earned that record. Was there a little bit of luck involved? Yes, but they were there to take advantage of the luck.
Sure.
So all of those things, yes. But when we look at the Chiefs and who they are this season, I think they are probably rounding into form at just the right time, or peaking, or whatever you want to call it. But they haven't been emphatically putting teams away much at all this year, until really they won the Texans game in the fourth quarter. The Steelers game they rolled away, and that was an emphatic victory. I think that there's a puncher's chance for the Texans in
for
this
sure.
game.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk myself into it being more of a puncher's chance. But I can't I can't sit there and listen to Stephen A. Smith act like there's any team that there's no chance that they're going to lose in a game.
D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud meet with the media today. So today's like a normal – today, Tuesday, is like a normal Wednesday on a Sunday game. So C.J. and D'Amico are both going to meet with the media. May I say, Seth, we just – sailed right past this when you pointed out your prowess in high school presentations, and it turned out you actually were much smarter than maybe your peers thought you were.
Well, much better at presenting.
But this is a credit to either intelligence or trial and error, but either way, you landed on the spot. You are making medical history here on this show right now.
For those watching
on the YouTube, Seth has spent the last 4 hours holding his throat right above the clavicles, right?
Yeah.
Right above the base.
Like I'm David Carradine in my last moments.
Yes.
And I've long been plagued with losing my voice to post-nasal drip for just like, I've never even been that ill. I just sound like I'm about to die, and I end up having to take like a week off of work because of it. I'm gonna work on this a little bit, but yeah, don't worry. I'm gonna do a YouTube video on this show.
Okay.
So I don't want to give away too many of the secrets, but I think I might have. I think I've searched all over the internet for the remedy that I think I've stumbled onto.
Yeah.
And I can't find it anywhere on the internet or PubMed. So I.
WebMD.
Yeah, I think I might win the Nobel Prize for this.
I think so.
Point.
I think you're. I think it's. I mean, this is amazing.
When I'm not using the I'm doing a few things here. And I, listen, everybody, I know I've tried every single remedy. Okay, your little honey, the salt water gargling, the various things that everybody has recommended to me. None of them have worked, but I think I've stumbled onto it.
Yeah, man.
This time last year, yeah. I had about the same exact issue in December last year, and I missed like a week of work because of it. Feeling exactly how I do
now,
right now. Just a head cold. I got a head cold. Yeah.
Now you're going to be missing work because you're going to be out on the speaking circuit talking to various medical seminars and things like that about this discovery that you've made.
Lambasting them for not having figured this
having
out. Sorry, with your fancy medical degrees.
That's right. That's right.
These people that are like, rest your voice no matter what. Oh, go die. I've got a family to feed. Rest my voice. I've got a job to do.
That's right.
Sons of bitches.
Those hot takes aren't going to bake themselves, okay?
Yeah. Hey, look, man, these Wookiee puns are deeply important.
Thank you. Thank you. That's Reggie Atitula. John Lopez is here. And some good news on the group text here, the Sports Radio 610 group text. Nick Wright joins In the Loop tomorrow, Wednesday at 10:20 a.m.
Yep.
It says we talking about practice.
We talking about practice.
Practice.
That's what he's been saying.
He's
calling this a practice game.
Yeah, he texted me. He tweeted it. About practice.
He's out there, man.
He's channeling Rex Ryan in a roundabout way.
Do you take his disrespect of the Texans as seriously? Because he's a Chiefs fan. Like it's part his job, but it is also partially like how he's, you know, wired, you know. Like,
oh, I can tell
you. He ain't making it up.
He is as big a Chiefs fan as there's. I mean, I'll talk about since toddler years.
Yeah.
No, it's sincere, and I really believe he, you know, he thinks that.
Been a good few years for him.
Yeah. But I think also with him, like, he tries to, I don't think he says stuff that he inherently doesn't believe.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Like, he does try and mix things up, but he tries to keep within the realm of, hey, I have some level of belief.
Some honesty.
In what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We'll see if we can get to the honest core, the nougat, if you will.
That's a good get. I'm going to stick around not only for lunch, but I have a confession I'm going to make on your show on Thursday. I don't think Lopez is going to believe me about this confession.
Well, I will be here with bells on.
Yeah. That's my tease.
I didn't think there was a statute of limitations on that crime, but cool. All right. Yeah.
I'm going to confess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And see what happens. Mm-hmm. Come and get me, boys. No, it's not criminal in nature. I promise you that. All right, fellas. You ready for today?
Not really, but we're going to do the show.
Let's do it.
We're going to have fun today. And Seth, just letting you know, people on the text line are saying that the Q collar might help. You know, the thing that Dalton Schultz wears.
Here we go.
Oh, that.
What is that? It's
a Q collar. Supposedly, it's supposed to like it applies pressure on your neck to increase blood flow to help. You know, when it comes to the brain,
it's phlegm,
in there.
Phlegm flow. That's something like that.
Why does it only work for white tight ends?
I don't know.
It seems like that's. It's the only. It's white tight ends wearing that stupid collar. I thought they were stuck in a futuristic movie about like a post-apocalyptic prison or something.
I like the idea.
Shot collar.
I like the idea that this is like the new white tight end butterfly collar,
right,
you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kate Stover just texted in, Reggie's right.
Appreciate you, Kate.
All right, we're done. We're out of time, Seth. Antibodies and reduced phlegm flow to you, my friend.
Antibodies as well.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. We're done. We're out of time.